Happening over here! Welcome to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Lookback and Animat's Reviews. Now, if this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, the title will go and explain for you what it is exactly all about. Now, take a look at the title. You see it? Okay, good. Then that means you know what it is. Okay, but specifically, though, it will talk about the latest news that has happened this week. And, for example, on this episode, we are going to be talking about the possible return of Animaniacs. Then we are going to be looking at a trailer called Son of Bigfoot. Then we will be discussing about the controversial marketing about a movie called Red Shoes and the Seven Dwarves. Then afterwards, we will be looking at something new that will be coming in Japan called Ghibli. I kind of had a stupid moment. It's like, how do you say it again? Is it Ghibli or Ghibli? Okay. No, I think it's Studio Ghibli. Okay, yeah, I think I got it. Or wait. Yes, okay, there we go. Okay, and then finally, of course, we have Animat's Pick of the Week. Sorry about that, guys. Now, if you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then all you have to do is head on down to Filmbook, that is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. Now, you can also go and email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. And so, for our first story right over here, this was something that really exploded the internet at one point, and it was an exclusive story on IndieWire, and it really did turn a lot of heads, and I've seen a lot of mixed reactions, and it really was quite interesting, because at first, you may think this sounds like something that would be absolutely amazing, but once you really think about it, is it really? And I'm talking, of course, about the potential comeback of Animaniacs. Yes, you may remember back in the 90s, one of the most popular and most beloved shows back in the mid to late 90s was Animaniacs, or at least in terms of animated series, it was Animaniacs. And what seems to be going on right now is that Amblin Television and Warner Brothers Animation are now currently in talks to see if there would be a possibility to bring Animaniacs back onto the small screen. We don't really have any more information of what they are going to do further, but they did state that the man behind the show, along with plenty of other great animated series back in the days, like Tiny Toon's Adventures, Pinky and the Brain, and Freakazoid, the one and only Steven Spielberg, would actually come back to develop the reboot of this series. And so far, that's all that we know so far, and the idea pretty much came when Animaniacs got really popular on Netflix when it came in last year, and it really brought back the popularity. And ever since then, Animaniacs did certainly become such a huge pop culture icon. Like, you would see many videos discussing about it, would talk about its humor, and even the cast of Animaniacs, they would also reunite a few times, and currently, they would be making their rounds to go and do live shows called Animaniacs Live, where the cast would come back, would go and, just do Animaniacs show. Well, just do, like, special best of Animaniacs moments in front of them, which would include the cast of, like, Rob Paulsen, Tress MacNeille, Jess Harnell, Sherry Stoner, Maurice LaMarche, and many, many more. Now, just in case that you guys don't know what Animaniacs is, it is a very popular, much beloved show. It actually won 8 Daytime Emmy Awards, and I'm using my source here on IndieWire, and it also won a Peabody Award, and I think Peabody will go and explain to you further about what it is. No, not Peabody like Peabody and Sherman, but at least what the people at the Peabody Awards explained. Too often today, animation on television is produced in a workman-like matter with little attention paid to characterization, illustration, and above all, narrative storytelling. This series will appeal to adults as well as children, remind us of the glory days of Hollywood animation and brings that period up to date with sparkling characters, witty dialogue, and stunning production. The magic touch of executive producer Steven Spielberg is in evidence in the works of senior producers Rich Ahrens and Sherry Stoner and the rest of the outstanding production team. For restoring quality to the daily animated television series and for doing so in a thoroughly engaging and highly kinetic manner, a Peabody to Steven Spielberg Presents Animaniacs. And for a while, like, it pretty much started, I think it mentioned somewhere, yes, it pretty much began from, actually throughout the 90s, from 1993 all the way up to 1998 until the ultimate grand finale, which was the direct-to-video movie Wacko's Wish. So that's pretty much the whole story, is that there could be a chance that we will see the grand return of Animaniacs. Now, what is actually very interesting with it is that throughout the discussions that I have seen about bringing back Animaniacs, now, there are some, of course, that are wondering, oh, that's great, I love Animaniacs, when is it going to be coming back? Or are they actually going to do it and stuff like that? That shouldn't really be the question that people should ask. For the most part, the real question that people are actually asking is not, is Animaniacs coming back? It's actually more, do we want Animaniacs to come back? Because there are definitely a lot of factors, and for me at least, there are two huge ones that would ultimately determine whether or not Animaniacs would come back. And with the first one, I just want to get it out of the way, is mainly because of how times have certainly changed. I mean, it really has been a long time since Animaniacs was on television. I mean, yes, it's only been about 20 years now, but keep in mind, 20 years is still a lot, and things can certainly change, and especially in our modern society, where technology has certainly advanced, and the ways that we would use social media, that has definitely changed, and we've definitely developed as a society because of it. But at the same time, though, what does make it quite an obstacle for Animaniacs to come back is mainly about how we have grown to be a lot more sensitive about whatever subject. And let me just explain to you guys something. Just recently, on my YouTube videos, I just got a comment, and I'm not gonna lie, it was actually one of the dumbest things that I've ever read. And it was actually someone telling me, you shouldn't say that on your videos. You might end up offending someone. Oh, dude. Oh, my dude. You must be new here, are you? And that's kind of the whole thing that we got here. Because the big thing with our modern society is that now more than ever, it is so easy to be offended, or it's so easy for people to just get offended. And this is not related to just one group. This is literally everyone. Whether you lean left or right politically, anybody is game to go and get offended. And even nowadays, people can even be offended for the smallest things. In fact, I wouldn't even be surprised if whatever I would say in this podcast that you're listening right now, people might end up offended, you know? Because, like, I've definitely seen people on the left being offended for just how a woman is represented in a video game and stuff like that, and that really got out of hand. And I've seen plenty of people in the right get offended because there's a movie that's way too multicultural for them, and they're just whining that there's not enough white people. Like, both sides are definitely guilty on this. And especially nowadays, in this political climate, it is massively intense. Like, now more than ever, people are really in touch with their political side, and it is quite common to see wars going on social media or people commenting on a rampage about whatever is going on in the world. So that's kind of the biggest problem. If Animaniacs does come back in this day and age, I can guarantee you that after every episode, there will be some people that will come out highly offended over one joke that they have done. I mean, keep in mind, Animaniacs really did got away with so many things back in the day. In fact, even during the 90s, it was considered quite risque. Like, they have certainly pushed the envelope for many different things and for many different subject matter. And especially, like, if Animaniacs would come back right now, they wouldn't be scared to touch upon whatever subject matter they want to talk about. Rather it be political, rather it be in pop culture, rather it be a social issue or whatever, they are going to do something that will guarantee piss off at least one person. I can guarantee you that. Now, in that regard, the only way that can pretty much cool down the heat in this massively intense political climate will be the day when Donald Trump will get impeached. Because that guy is probably the man who is responsible for society really going downhill, and especially America going downhill in general. But once the day that he does get impeached and gets his freaking orange butt out of the Oval Office, that's when things are going to cool down. That's when we're going to see a little bit of improvement, that on social media we will see people talking a little bit less about politics. Not, it won't solve the problem. People will still talk about it, but at least it will be significantly less that people will discuss about it. And hopefully there will be some other stuff that will be decreasing and minimizing as well. One thing that I would hope the most for would be we would see minimizing on hate crimes caused by conservative white nationalists. Like, that's one thing I hope for. But all that is pretty much to go and say that we cannot have Animaniacs while Donald Trump is still in the White House. He needs to be kicked out, find all the evidence with Russia and stuff like that ASAP, get him out of there, along with maybe some of the people on the GOP, and then it'll be a little bit more okay for Animaniacs to come back, because that's going to be the time when people will be a little bit less alert about anything that would seem rather offensive, per se. But even with that, though, like, if we take out the subject of politics and offensiveness regarding Animaniacs, if it does come back, and this is my second reason right over here, will it come back as anything that would be as good as what we got back in the 90s? Because keep in mind, Animaniacs really did set such a high standard. In fact, if you would go ask anyone, chances are they could possibly tell you that the best animated series that would ever come out of Warner Brothers is actually Animaniacs. Or maybe some people would debate it with Pinky and the Brain or Freakazoid or stuff like that, but it's kind of in the same circle or kind of in the same TV universe, you know what I mean? But yeah, that's kind of the whole thing with Animaniacs. If it does come back, is it going to be even as good? Will Animaniacs be able to adapt to the modern times? Because keep in mind, this is technically a TV reboot, and I know that there are definitely a lot of great examples of highly successful TV reboots. Netflix actually offers a good chunk of it, actually, with Fuller House, with Bill Nye, and then you also got MST3K. Those are great examples that TV shows that have been rebooted, and they actually do work. However, the thing is with Animaniacs, though, we are discussing about a animated reboot. And in terms of animated TV shows, that is where we are going into the category of Teen Titans Go and the Powerpuff Girls. And judging by how Cartoon Network is going, they don't necessarily have the highest reputation. Just saying. So that's the thing, is that if Animaniacs does come back, is it going to be as funny? Is it going to be as enjoyable? Or are they just going to be rehashing the same old material and would just purely rely on nostalgia to just roll with the punches? Or if they are going to discuss about some of the recent trends that are going on, like not just not just regarding politics and how society is right now, but also in terms of pop culture, are they going to implement in like a whole bunch of memes? Like you're going to see, I don't know, like freaking Yakko and Wacko having a nice nice cup of coffee and stuff like that. Who knows? Like, it really does depend. Like, there are so many factors. Maybe it can work, and maybe it won't. Who knows? But keep in mind, though, ultimately, with all that said, I just want to say right now that nothing has been confirmed. Amblin and Warner Brothers aren't only discussing about it. There could be a chance that they're not even gonna come in at all. So that could be the case right over here. Who knows? But if they do come back, it could bring in a lot of doubt, and we don't know what's going to be going on. Like, especially with the factors that I brought up, with how many people that it might end up offend in this, social media culture, and is it even going to be as good? Because I'm sure if Animaniacs does get rebooted, people will put in such a high standard. They will be watching that thing like a freaking hawk, and any small mistake that they would do, rather it be in the individual skits or how the characters are being portrayed or how the jokes are, it could be rather iffy. Like one bad move and the whole castle will be crumbled. You know what I mean? It's just, it seems like a bit of a risky move, and who knows how it could go. But then again, even if it does get rebooted, I don't think we're going to immediately see it right there. Like, if Warner Brothers and Amblin does say yes, chances are we're not going to see it for a while. At this point, it would be coming back in the fall of 2018, or even somewhere in, like, at the end of 2018 or in the beginning of 2019. And you never know, like, the world can definitely change during that time. Who knows what could possibly happen? So that's the whole thing, is that do we really want to see Animaniacs come back? You can let me know if you want to see it, but who knows how it's going to happen. For me, as someone who has watched Animaniacs when I was a kid back in the 90s, I don't know. For me, it's rather iffy. Like, maybe it would be just best to just leave the series as it is. Like, you know, we have the show from the 90s, and, like, I could be satisfied with just that, and that's pretty much it. But who knows what could happen if the Animaniacs do return from, or, like, they do come out of the water tower again and would cause such mischief. Who knows? Okay, so for our next story right over here, we actually got a trailer for an upcoming animated feature. Not necessarily a big name animated feature, this is just a rather small one, but it still is rather interesting to talk about. And the movie that I am talking about in this case is The Son of Bigfoot. Now, for those of you who don't know what it is, allow me to explain to you through what I've seen throughout the trailer. Okay, so you got this kid, and he's living a normal life and just living with his mother. However, he is curious to know about whatever happened to his father, because he was never there throughout his life, and he knows that he had a dad, and his mom never mentioned that his dad was dead, so he decided to go and investigate, and he found a little clue of where his dad could be. So he tried checking out into the woods and see what is going on. And it turns out he actually did found his dad. And, well, guess what? As the title explains, his dad is actually Bigfoot. And throughout the whole time, from there, we actually see the relationship of the Bigfoot dad and the son, and where the kid starts to discover that he himself has some Bigfoot blood, where some weird things would happen to him, and also he can communicate with animals, and, you know, all that crazy shenanigans that would be happening, and then there would be a plot at the end where he has to go save his dad from the evil government trying to do crazy experiments on him. So that's pretty much the whole plot that I've gotten through Son of Bigfoot. And honestly, like, as I stated before, this is not a big name animated feature. This is not coming from any big budget major animation studio. You know, this is just a small thing coming from Europe. And I was curious about, like, who made this in the first place. And I checked out, like, right at the beginning when they were introducing all the companies that worked on it. And then there was a familiar name that I saw called N-Wave. N-Wave Pictures, to be specific. And I looked at that, and I was like, wait, N-Wave? Why does that sound familiar? So I decided to go and do a little bit of research, and there actually is a reason why I remember the name of N-Wave. They are actually the Belgian animation studio that has brought us films including Fly Me to the Moon, A Turtle Tale Movies, The House of Magic, I believe that's the title, and you may remember last year's disaster, The Wildlife. Yeah, you know that Robinson Crusoe movie? That's them. They are actually the creators of The Son of Bigfoot. Now, before I would get back onto that, allow me to give you a little bit of my thoughts when I experienced the Bigfoot trailer right over here. Now, I am not gonna lie. During the first half, I was actually really intrigued, and I saw that there was a little bit of potential to it. You know, I saw that there could be a chance that, like, if it keeps itself rather simple, then it might turn out to be quite a charming movie. I know it's a little bit of a silly premise where there's this average kid who just discovers that his dad is freaking Bigfoot, but, you know, there is actually some heartwarming subtleties thrown onto it. Like, you see the journey and the determination that the kid has to go and find his dad in the woods. And then you see a little bit of a bonding of his dad and Bigfoot, and learn about, like, how the kid is actually half Bigfoot himself. So it might actually have a bit of potential right over there. But then things suddenly start to crumble down. That's when the movie suddenly starts to really suck, when they introduced one of the kids' abilities. Apparently, when you are a Bigfoot, you can actually communicate to animals. And what I mean by communicating is that you could just say, oh, hi, Mr. Bear, and the bear will say hi back to you. And that is when we are introduced to an entire cast of talking freaking animals. And that's when we see the element of the wildlife coming back. Yes, we got another bunch of talking animals working together with this one guy movie. So it just decided to go back into that territory. And of course, you got the ET subplot where the evil government is coming in. They want to take away his dad just to do all these crazy experiments because holy crap, it's freaking Bigfoot. And then it just goes into this whole rescuing mission where the animals and the kid come together and they're working out by comedic antics to go and save his dad. And that's where it entirely falls down frickin' flat. And it really does suck as well, because, like I said before, the first half, it does have potential. Because if you do keep it as simple as it is, you take away the talking animals, you take away the whole government thing, like, you take away the whole antagonist aspect, you can just make it a simple story about a kid whom his dad is Bigfoot, and you see a bit of a bonding relationship, how they're, you know, starting to reconnect, how they're learning about each other, and why is it that the dad had to run away and not be a part of the kid's life. It has potential to have a little bit of comedy, but a lot of heartwarming moments, kind of like a goofy movie in a sense, where it's pretty much a father-son buddy movie. It could have been, but they decided to screw it up by adding in the cast of freaking animals. It's like, why do you need to do that? why do we need to have this ability where he can, like, he can talk to animals, and then you have to add in a whole bunch of freaking characters that I know I'm not going to care about. I know that I won't think that they're freaking funny. And honestly, they just turn it back into this random generic kids film. And I understand, like, the whole premise that you got this kid, like, this average boy, mind you, who suddenly discovers that his dad is actually Bigfoot. And the biggest question that people have, they're not necessarily bothered by the animals and all that stuff. Like, basically, the big question that people are asking when they look at this trailer is just, what kind of woman is so desperate to either have a husband or to get freaking laid to the point of where they would even bang Bigfoot? Like, who would bang Bigfoot is basically the big question right over there. And it was, you know, and honestly, it would have been really interesting that we also got the mom's perspective of this. I was in the forest and then I found your dad, who is freaking Bigfoot, and we fell in love and we decided to get laid. What the fridge? I mean, I know it's absolutely ridiculous, but then again, I wouldn't necessarily laugh myself, because considering how absolutely hairy that I actually am, like, that sounds like my future love life. It's basically, I need to go and find a girl who would be, like, basically horny enough to go and bang Bigfoot. Technically, I'm your guy right there! But yeah, that's pretty much my whole thoughts on the trailer that we have right over here, is that, you know, it does seem like it has potential, and I will admit, even the animation is not too bad. It does have a little bit of a feature film quality, but that's just from the trailer itself. It does look like it did improve a little bit from what we did get from the wildlife, but other than that, overall, I don't know. I feel like it had an idea. Like, it had a ridiculous idea, but it had a chance to turn out pretty well. But with the second half, it just turned it into a really dumb and cheesy animated kids flick. Just turned out to be rather generic and absolutely pointless. Almost as pointless as the wildlife itself, unfortunately. Now, when it comes to the release date, however, I would like to mention, though, that it's a little bit of a different case. Now, so far, nobody, we do not have it in North America just yet. There is no release date announced for it. But so far, Europe is actually going to be having it soon. Like, in the UK, France, Belgium, and all that kind of stuff, they will be having it this year in August, which is rather unfortunate. And I guess August overall is going to be a nightmare month for animation in general. I mean, yeah, sure. The Emoji Movie is coming out at the end of July, but that still technically counts as, like, seeming throughout August. And then on top of that, we also got the freaking Nut Job 2, possibly the most pointless sequel that anybody can ask for. Actually, scratch that, because I don't think anybody really asked for a Nut Job sequel. And then in Europe, the Salt on an Open Wound would have to be the Son of Bigfoot. But if you are interested to see it, once again, it's going to be coming out in August around Europe. Okay, so for our next story right over here, I am so glad that it is not just me. This is actually a throwback from an old trailer that I've seen not too long ago. I don't know if I've discussed about this in the animation podcast. If I have, it must have been like an early episode. But what we got right over here is that somehow the movie decided to come back and they wanted to advertise at the Cannes Film Festival. But my God, it brought out so much outrage and controversy. And yeah, it kind of brought back that sense of uncomfortableness when I saw that trailer. And the movie that I am talking about is called Red Shoes and the Seven Dwarves. Now, what is interesting about Red Shoes and the Seven Dwarves is that when it presented itself at the Cannes Film Festival, man, are there people who were pissed off on social media. Because the thing is that they put in this big banner of Red Shoes and the Seven Dwarves, and the tagline in there, I kid you not, I'm pretty much reading it right over here, it states, "What if Snow White was no longer beautiful and the Seven Dwarves are no longer short?" And what basically you have, like, the picture that you have on the billboard is that on one side, you got this, like, hot babe-looking Snow White. Like, she's thin, she's tall, she looks like a model. But then, on the other side, you also got another girl who's a little bit shorter and a bit bigger than the Snow White that, that I've mentioned before. And the big difference is that, the thin Snow White was wearing her shoes while the larger Snow White was holding her shoes. So basically indicating that, like, if you wear the shoes, then you become the society's portrayal of beautiful. But the way that it's marketed, it's basically flat out saying that, what if Snow White is fat and ugly? And let me tell you guys, the same thing pretty much happened when you watch the trailer. I mean, I just rewatched it recently, and yeah, absolutely, it is quite uncomfortable because they released the trailer way back when it was recently announced back in South Korea, the place where they made it. And basically, the trailer that I saw is that you got these guys that were just checking out this hot chick that was pretty much undressing. Like, she had a full day, and now she can be at home and just relaxing. So, slowly but surely, she's just taking off some elements of her clothes. And, like, you just see two of the dwarves that are just checking her out. Like, just, she doesn't see them, but, like, they're just creepily just checking her out. It's like, oh, yeah, this is gonna be so hot. And then suddenly, when Snow White would just take off her shoes, suddenly she becomes a bit larger. Then she immediately gains weight right before their eyes. And they're like, oh, good God. And basically the whole punchline of that trailer is just, you thought you're going to see a hot girl stripping, but it actually turns out that she's fat. Why did you know it? And yeah, like, it really does send out a really, really bad message. And it's basically just flat out body shaming. It basically flats out promotes body shaming in general. And there definitely is a massive problem because this is honestly one of the worst marketings that I have ever seen for a movie. Much more worse than Sony. Because I'll give Sony credit. Like, say what you will about the 2016 Ghostbusters reboot. Rather, if you like it or not, you know, that's all up to you. But the big thing about it is that the trailer itself, and I'll even throw in the Emoji Movie, they absolutely suck. Like, honestly, I watched that and it is absolutely awful. Like, they present some of the worst jokes in there. They present how the special effects are just terrible. It's just everything about those two trailers are awful. But here's the catch, though. The message that I am getting from those trailers is that those movies absolutely suck. Like, if you're gonna watch those things, you're gonna get a pretty crappy movie. But in the case of Red Shoes and the Seven Dwarves, however, I'm getting a pretty mean-spirited movie. Like, I got a feeling that most of the jokes are gonna be how unattractive and how fat Snow White actually is, how the Red Shoes are just all a massive disguise to make her look beautiful and all that kind of stuff. And, like, of course, throwing in a lot of awkward sexual innuendos. So not only does it tell me it's going to be a bad movie, but it's also going to be an immoral movie. So much so that even the people working on the film are actually pretty pissed off about it. In fact, just recently they announced that Chloe Grace Moretz would be the star of this movie. And she actually went onto Twitter and she is not happy about it at all. And with good reason. Apparently, she stated on Twitter, "I am just as appalled and angry as everyone else. This wasn't approved by me or my team. Please know I have let the producers of the film know. I lent my voice of a beautiful script that I hope you will all see in its entirety." And there is some truth to it, because there is no freaking way that the South Koreans would go and make an entire animated body-shaming movie. That would be absolutely stupid. And what's interesting, though, is that on the website of the production company that made it, I believe it is Lotus Pictures, I believe, or Locust Pictures. I'm trying to specifically find if it actually stated the production company or, okay, it's just, I guess it's just Lotus. So, they actually put in a little bit of a summary of what this movie is about, for real. And it actually stated, a normal girl born into extraordinary circumstances, she's a princess who doesn't fit into the celebrity world of princesses or their dress size. She wants to stay true to herself, but Fairy Tale Island is all about looks, so it makes it hard not to want to be like the others. In her quest to find her lost father, she learns not only to accept herself, but to celebrate who she is, inside and out, and to let the beauty within, the beauty that Prince Merlin falls in love with, shine brighter than anyone else in the land. And you know, that does sound like it has a bit of potential, you know? It does sound like a movie that would actually promote body positivity. Be happy with who you are, rather you be freaking skinny as a toothpick, or you're round as a circle. You know, just appreciate who you are, and that beauty is only skin deep, you know? It's pretty much emphasizing all that. And honestly, it really is stupid what the freaking what the freaking marketing is trying to do, because they're showing it as the freaking opposite. Like, honestly, I don't blame Chloe Moretz for being pissed off about it. In fact, girl, let me speak to you. This is not your fault. You're only voicing this. And I understand that you've definitely been turned on and you're really happy about the script that's promoting body positivity, but it's not your fault for what happened in the marketing. That is absolutely stupid. In fact, there is actually a quote. Let me go with my source here in Variety. There is a little thing that, where was it? There we go. Yeah. This is a statement from, Lotus, themselves. And they've actually stated, actually it's from one of the producers from, Sujin Huang. He actually stated, as the producer of the theatrical animated film Red Shoes and the Seven Dwarfs, now in production, Locust Corporation... Oh, there we go. Locust Corporation. Thank you. Locust, Lotus, or Fudge Nabbit. I'm confused now. My life is full of confusion! Anyways, Locust Corporation wishes to apologize regarding the first element of our marketing campaign in the form of a Cannes billboard and a trailer, which we realize has the opposite effect from which was intended. That advertising campaign is being terminated. Oh, I definitely freaking hope so, because if you're trying to campaign a movie about body positivity, and you're pretty much trying to flat out promote it by saying, "What if Snow White is fat and freaking stupid?" You might as well be freaking fired, I swear to God. Our film, a family comedy, carries a message designed to challenge social prejudice related to standard of physical beauty in society by emphasizing the importance of inner beauty. We appreciate and are grateful for the constructive criticism of those who brought this to our attention. We sincerely regret any embarrassment or dissatisfaction this mistaken advertising has caused to any of the individual artists or companies involved with the production of future distribution of our film, none of whom had any involvement with creating or approving the now discontinued advertising campaign. And yeah, this is definitely going to cost Red Shoes so much, because they're trying to promote it so that the movie would actually be coming out in 2018. But at this point, with the massive screw-up that they've presented at one of the biggest film festivals in the world, yeah, it's not going to be until a long time that they have to go and promote this movie. Because honestly, there's no freaking way that anyone would want to buy this. I mean, you look at the you look at the trailer that they have, and you look at the billboard that they presented at cons. Would anybody be so stupid to buy this freaking thing? I mean, why? Like, it's absolutely stupid. There's no way. Like, honestly, this is going to be a massive setback for the movie, and we're not going to see it for a while, honestly. They need to rework their marketing campaign so that at least they can do their frickin' job to at least show that they're promoting body positivity and not just freaking flat out body shaming. I mean, seriously. I mean, I don't know. Like, I'm just trying to think of another crazy example about this. And, you know, that would actually be like, you know, if in Finding Dory, the way that Disney would promote it by saying that, oh, what if the star of the movie is the stupid fish from the first film? Watch as Dory meets up with other fishes that have freaking problems. This is the Fish with Problems movie. You know, like, it's absolutely ridiculous. It is embarrassing. And the trailer and the promotional art themselves, it makes me uncomfortable. And honestly, I would question if I would even want to watch this. They would have to work so much for me to reconsider to even look at this. Because so far, if it actually does come in to... I'm going to be very honest. If they actually do continue this kind of promotion and bring it onto North America and stuff like that, I don't think I would even want to review it. Honestly, I would be so disgusted and turned off that I would even refuse to even watch it in theaters and give it a review. I would just flat out skip it entirely. I mean, this is just wrong. And seriously, this is just terrible, honestly. Like, honestly, if they gotta work back onto the marketing, they got a hell of a lot of work to do. Our next story that we have right over here, we're going to be talking a little bit about Studio Ghibli and a new thing that they're actually going to do. And no, this is not regarding a new animated short or a new animated feature or anything that Hayao Miyazaki is currently working on at the studio, which I'm sure everybody is already excited for it. But this is actually going to be a park. And no, this is not going to be like a big theme park or anything like that. This is going to be something called Ghibli Park. I'm trying to think. Wait, is it called Studio Ghibli? No, yeah, okay, no. Actually, no, I suddenly remember that right now. Okay, good. It's perfect timing. I remember it's called Studio Ghibli. That's how you pronounce it. Got it. Okay, but anyways, going into my source here at Inside the Magic, it has stated that Ghibli Park is set to open inside Aichi's Expo Port in the city of Nagoya that allows guests to explore nature throughout the year and changing seasons. Expo Port already houses recreations of Totoro characters Satsuke and Mei's homes, which debuted at the 2005 World Fair. Hayao Miyazaki, who worked and directed on My Neighbor Totoro, has said that no trees will be cut down to make way for the park and will have a limited impact onto the environment. Oh, would you look at that? Hayao Miyazaki definitely shows a lot more care about the environment than the United States. Go figure. It also states, throughout the focus will be on My Neighbor Totoro, Ghibli Park will also feature characters from other Studio Ghibli films such as Princess Mononoke and Spirited Away. There are no plans for attractions yet, so it sounds more of a peaceful place for fans of anime to enjoy the world of Studio Ghibli. And so far, just reading about it, I mean, it's already enough that they actually have a full-size recreation of Satsuke and Mei's house. And that is definitely something that, for fans of Studio Ghibli and anime, it's like one of their top things that they got to do when visiting Japan. Like, at least visit Satsuki and Mei's house, and I wouldn't even be surprised if you would have so many people acting like kids, running around and screaming like, yeah! I don't know, at least for me, that's the most memorable part of My Neighbor Totoro, is the fact that kids couldn't freaking shut up! Okay, but anyways, going back onto this. This is actually rather interesting, because from the sound of it, they're not necessarily doing anything too big. This is not like a big Studio Ghibli theme park, and they're not necessarily doing or like an amusement park or anything like that. Like, what they're crafting here is a Studio Ghibli-themed park. Like, that's all that it is. It's just a park. A place that you can just walk around nature, you can go relax on a bench, and you can go and check out anything that's related to some of the Studio Ghibli works, where, you, of course, like, the big thing is going to be My Neighbor Totoro, but you'll also see elements of Princess Mononoke and also Studio Ghibli. So that does sound pretty nice. And honestly, the more I think about it, the more that it sounds perfect, actually. Like, the more subtleties that there are, the more that it would be connected with Studio Ghibli. Because when you think about it, like, sure, they are some of the most popular movies, and there are some of them that they can be pretty big and the imagination can really get out there. But what really does make Studio Ghibli such a grand animation studio, like one of the greatest animation studios in modern times that we all remember them today and are so beloved, is the subtlety. You know, the way that we can appreciate nature. There really isn't too much that's going on. And also the factor of the environment itself. And keep in mind, with Hayao Miyazaki, that is a big repetitive theme that you would see throughout some of his films, and that is regarding the environment. Rather it be with movies like My Neighbor Totoro, Castle in the Sky, Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind, Princess Mononoke, and among a few others as well, or even Ponyo. They do have this theme of environmentalism. And you could tell that Hayao Miyazaki is someone that really does care about the trees and nature. And just let, you know, it's not about industrialism. It's not people taking over the world. This is just letting nature be nature. And sometimes they can create even more beautiful architecture than man can ever create by themselves. Sometimes the trees can be as magnificent or even more magnificent than whatever building that you can find in New York City. And honestly, that would definitely be fantastic. And this is more the case of less is more in order to really transport you into the world of Studio Ghibli. I mean, sure, like, Disney can probably think up of something extraordinary by making this big budget Disney ride at the parks and stuff like that. But honestly, if you just do a pretty minimalistic take, if you just go, like, let nature be nature and not cut down trees, and, like, you'll just have a few characters appearing here and there, yeah, you'll definitely get the full experience of a Studio Ghibli movie. And yeah, this definitely does sound humble, it sounds peaceful, and it definitely does sound exciting for anyone who is a fan of Studio Ghibli. So I just want to say that if you guys are a massive Studio Ghibli fan and you cannot wait to go onto Ghibli Park, then all you have to do is just wait until early 2020 when it will be open. But in the meantime, you could still go and check out Sasuke and Mei's house. And now it is time that we shall go and end things off with Animat's Pick of the Week. And with this week, this was actually something that I have stumbled upon social media. And I'm going to be very honest. Maybe I'm not the best person to discuss about this subject, considering I have not seen a single episode of this show in particular. But I can't help but feel that there is something that's rather off. There is something that's rather fishy with what people are doing on social media with this thing. And chances are, you might have probably stumbled upon this as well on some place like Facebook or Twitter or Reddit or anything like that. But allow me to explain what the whole situation is. Now, apparently there is this Reddit post, and this actually got pretty popular all around the website as well, and it stumbled upon onto several different social media platforms, that apparently they were discussing about this one character from the Powerpuff Girls reboot. And I'm talking about the character named Jared Shapiro. If you don't know who he is, now from the stuff that I've read about the guy, apparently this is a new character that was created for the Powerpuff Girls reboot that actually has a crush on Blossom. And Blossom actually does have a crush on him back. So that's kind of one of the big romantic stingers that the 2016 series would have to offer, is mostly the question, are we going to see these two characters come together? But what apparently is going on is that people have made the shocking discovery that Jared Shapiro is actually modeled after a real person. And that actually is the writer and the voice of the character named Jake Goldman, who actually did write all the episodes, at least on season one of the Powerpuff Girls reboot. Like, he wrote, like, the way that this little post or this picture is presenting it is that Jake Goldman actually did write all the episodes where Jared Shapiro actually did appear in. And more, they would go deeper into this situation. And what pretty much these people are accusing the Powerpuff Girls of doing is that they're saying that Jake self-inserted himself onto the show, create his, like, self-inserted OC to go and have him be in a romantic relationship with Blossom. And what follows afterwards is that you actually see a few pictures from the show itself where you see romantic moments with Blossom and Jared Shapiro, where there's this one picture right over here with Blossom relaxing, and you got Jared dressed up like a Viking behind her. And then you got this little fantasy moment where Blossom is right next to this super muscly Jared Shapiro. And then you also got another one, and for some people, they say that this is crossing the line, is that you got a bit of a Phantom of the Opera parody where you have Blossom dressed up as Christine Daae and Jared as the Phantom. So you pretty much got this whole scene where it's like they're singing together, past the point of no return, no backward glances, and all that kind of stuff. So I would sing more of it, but I need to pretty much remember more lyrics of Phantom of the Opera. I've listened to it so much, but oh my god, I don't know. Unless you guys desperately need me to go and sing an entire song of Phantom of the Opera, I don't know. Anyways, okay, I don't know. I'm just distracting myself. Sorry about that. So yeah, basically the whole point of this post is that people are a little bit freaked out, and basically, even though they're not saying it, they're trying to portray Jake Goldman as getting a little bit of pedo vibes, saying that he might actually have a secret crush on Blossom, and by making Jared Shapiro, he would actually have like a bit of his little fantasies come true with that thing. And I knew that there would be something that is off right over there. Now, before we would go and, like, pick up our pitchforks and stuff like that and go attack on Jake Goldman and stuff like that for doing this kind of thing, to have this secret crush on Blossom, now, let me just explain to you guys, you do know that this is actually rather common in animation, right? Like, this is a usual thing that we would see creators of the shows, writers, animators, and all that stuff. They would go and self-insert themselves onto like the animated project that they're working on, you know, put themselves into the world of the TV show or the movie. And in most cases, they would usually insert themselves as extras. They're usually just pedestrians in the city, or they're just walking past by the main characters and stuff like that. But there are some examples as well that sometimes they could actually be the main characters as well. And a great example of this is with the Pixar films. Some people have stated that Buzz Lightyear is actually modeled after John Lasseter. Or in The Incredibles, some people even said that Syndrome is actually modeled after Brad Bird. However, do we accuse John Lasseter of being this egotistical spaceman who pretty much lives in his own world and thinks that he's in a different planet? Absolutely not. Do we accuse Brad Bird of being a lunatic fanboy? Absolutely not. So why would this be the case with Jake Goldman? And I have done some research, and I did find that some people have stated that apparently what has been going on is that there's no complex story into it. There's no hidden agenda. It's just something that the crew from the Powerpuff Girls reboot thought that it was funny. They looked at Jake and they thought, hey, you know what, Jake? You do look like a massive nerd, so we're going to make you this character right over here. And you know what? You do sound rather nerdy as well. You know, just for the lols, why don't we actually go and make you voice the character as well? So it was just a fun little idea that the writers had, and they thought it was a cute little thing. And as for the extra accusation that they have, like, they're trying to make this a massive proof that it really is Jared doing all the puppet work and stuff like that, because he's the one that has written all the episodes that would have Jared in it. But the way that they're presenting it is as if Jake has only written the episodes that would have Jared. What you don't know is that if you do your research, Jared has written a lot of episodes for the Powerpuff Girls reboot. It's not just for that, it's for the majority of them. So that's the thing, is that it's not just like they don't just call upon Jake whenever Jared is summoned. Like, he has to do his job by working on almost all the episodes of the Powerpuff Girls. Rather it be as just writing for additional material, or actually full-on writing the story. He has to do his freaking job. He's just one of the writers, equally as much as everyone else. And the whole thing, why I do feel that it's so fishy, is that, you know, it's not really the fact that people are getting pedo vibes from Jake. That is not the point at all. I just feel like people are just doing it just so they can justify their hate on the TV show. Now, it's no secret that the Powerpuff Girls reboot, it's not a liked show. Or, at the very least, it's not as beloved as the original series done by Craig McCracken. And I have heard of many different criticisms that have been put onto the series. Rather it be that the voice cast has been completely replaced by the original people that worked on it, and the original people are really not happy about it. There is also the factor that the animation really does suck, and admittedly, even I have seen plenty of examples of bad animation in the Powerpuff Girls, and they can absolutely be laughably bad. There is also the factor that throughout the whole series, they would do nothing but force in memes, like you would have Bubbles do go no me gusta and all that kind of stuff. And you would also have the girls do inhumane things, like having frickin' six-year-olds twerking. Like, okay, that is honestly a step a little bit too far. But honestly, I understand that there is this hate for this series, but I don't want you guys to go and fabricate some stuff to the point that it would be damaging to the people working on it. It's okay if you can attack the show, but don't attack the people that are working on the show. And trust me, as a critic myself, like, that's an important rule of thumb that you gotta do. You gotta attack the subject, just the subject in itself, criticize the writing, criticize the animation. Don't criticize the people that are working on it, because at that point, well, okay, technically you can, but like, do it in a way that is respectful. But don't, like, I'm not saying don't, I think the word that I am looking for is don't attack the others, or don't attack the individuals that are working on it. And I mean, that's what I feel like the worst case scenario is with this post right over here, is that people might take this the wrong way, and they might go and accuse Jake of being a pedophile. And honestly, I am pretty certain that this is not the case. This is not true at all. People are just finding reasons to justify their hate for the TV series. I mean, if this would be a similar case to a show that is a lot more respected, like Steven Universe per se, like if they have the exact same case with, like, if they would have a Jared Shapiro onto, you know, onto Steven Universe, that there is actually someone in the writing team that would be modeled after and provide their voice and would be a character that would have a crush on Steven, then I don't think people will complain about it. But because of the fact that this is the Powerpuff Girls reboot and they would spread massive hate onto it, honestly, it's just that. It's mainly because they're doing this because this is a TV show that has a pretty bad reputation. And honestly, I would like to have Jake Goldman's take on this, because I you know, honestly, I feel like this is a situation that, like, he and the writing crew of the Powerpuff Girls can actually go and defend their case, saying that this is not the case. This is not Jake's agenda so that he can live his fantasies to be in a romantic relationship with Blossom, you know? I would like to hear their take on it. Now, rather, if I would have the power to do so, that I don't know, or if they would even care to listen to this podcast, that I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't think too highly of myself, but, you know, I would like, you know, honestly, this is something that can easily be resolved if we can hear their take on the character of Jared Shapiro. If we can hear what they have to say about the making of the character, the coincidences about having Jake be modeled and voiced, be the voice for Jared and all that kind of stuff, I feel like it can easily be solved. So I think the lesson in this overall is that, you know, if you hate the series, that's fine, whatever. But don't let that hate simmer onto the individuals that would make it. I don't want to see people attack Jake Goldman for this, seriously. That would be a little bit too far. At that point, it doesn't matter how much you hate the series or how bad the series is. You don't attack the people that make it. You can attack the thing, but not the people that made the thing. That's the whole point, okay? I hope we're all good with it, okay? So, you could go back hating on the Powerpuff Girls, but just leave Jake Goldman alone, okay? Just leave him alone. He's not a pedophile, okay? It's just a fun little thing that the writers decided to do. That's it. That's all. And that is all that I've got for this week, so thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can go and find more of my work at film-book.com. Just search for Mathieu Brunet or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at Animat505. Now, if you have listened to this podcast or on iTunes or any other podcast service, do you mind doing us a little favor and rate and review this episode? That would actually be nice. And if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, then hit that like button and then leave us a little comment on your thoughts about the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening, and until next week, see you later.